Hey, Steve. Great to see you. Here, come on in.
Do you have this online so we can email it to all our kids?
Sure. Hey, Steve. Do you want to sit over here? That's a great call. Yeah.
That's what you mean?
Right. We'll create a new email list for the show, like children of members, to send it out. Okay, so Erev Tov, good evening. Thanks for being here, especially after a week off and right before Thanksgiving. It's good to learn together. And this is a tough one, actually. I figured originally I was going to call this class The Gift of Years, Honoring Elders in the Jewish Tradition. When I first named it, I thought we were just going to talk about the general principle of honoring elders. And then I realized, like, how can I talk about that and leave out the mitzvah of honoring parents? So what I'd like to do today is have three sections of the class. First, on the general ideas behind Kibud Av V'Em, honoring one's mother and father. Or technically, it's father and mother, and we'll talk about the order in the Torah as we get through it. So that's going to be part one. Part two is going to be what the rubric is for honoring elders in general. How old do you have to be considered an elder? So those kinds of questions will be part two. And then part three, we'll come back to the idea of parents with a topic that I think is important and unfortunately far more relevant than most people realize, unless if they've been in that situation themselves, and that's honoring parents who have been at best negligent and at worst abusive. How does Judaism think about those questions of honoring abusive parents? So there's a lot to talk about. I'll just start with the introduction that many sages point out that this is probably one of the greatest challenges. The mitzvah of honoring parents might be the hardest mitzvah that a person does in their life. If you think about it, it's a mitzvah that really doesn't necessarily have an end to it, right? Because for some of us, we're blessed to have our parents into adulthood, and so it's a long-term mitzvah. It's the first mitzvah that you really start with when you're born. Your parents hopefully do a lot for you, and so there's an expectation that you have to do for them as well. And there's kind of a debate, but even after a parent dies, right, in the Jewish tradition, if anything, it gets harder, right? There's Shiva, there's Kaddish, there's Yortzeits and Yizkors, and lots of things that we could potentially do after a parent dies to honor them as well. So this is probably the longest term mitzvah in the Torah. It's also probably the hardest one, especially right at that age of bar bat mitzvah. You know, you finally become obligated in the mitzvot, and by a miracle of God, somehow the hormones turn on, and the attitude and angst of the teenage years seem to click on right at the same moment. And so honoring parents does not start as an easy mitzvah when we actually become responsible for mitzvot in our teenage years. It's something that can be increasingly... It's often the people you're closest with who you end up experiencing the most friction with. And yet there seems to be a mitzvah to honor your parents. So how do we think about that in the tradition? What's the rubric of the mitzvot? That's what we're going to start with, and then we'll go into different permutations of that.
Are we going to discuss what it actually means?
Yes, we're definitely going to discuss that. Okay, excuse me. I'm going to take off my sweater and my daughter's Trader Joe sticker. She decided to put on it.
One question. What happened to marriage, Rabbi? Did we skip that? Or?
You know, I realized after putting the series together that I skipped marriage.
Okay.
If I could, I guess the only justification is that we're all born. Well, all of us who are here were born, and we're all going to die. And I guess not everyone gets married, so that was just one thought. Mm-hmm. But if I do this again, I'll probably include marriage.
Well, all next year's topic.
The year of marriage. Sure, everyone would love to hear my 15-part wisdom on that. Okay, so let's get started. I didn't think of it this way, but there's actually two commandments. Jeff was asking, what does it mean to honor your parents? There's actually two different commandments in the Torah about honoring parents. And the two seem to be different, or clearly they're different. The Torah talks about them in different verses using different words. So let's put on our kind of Bible commentary hats for a second and read the verses carefully, the two different psukim that talk about the mitzvah with regards to parents. Let's try to look for similarities and differences and think about, you know, how is the Torah justifying these mitzvot So these are going to be sources 1 and 2. We'll do most of the reading in English, and I'll translate from time to time. And I'll do the Hebrew and then give my own translation from time to time. Ethel, do you want to start us with source 1?
Yeah, I'm just getting my eyeglasses.
Sure, yeah. Source 1, I'll just say before we start that I don't think it's the best translation. So okay. I'll ask Ethel to read it, and then I'm going to retranslate it.
So we're starting at Shemot.
Yeah, exactly.
Shemot, Exodus chapter 20, verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that you may long endure on the land that the Lord your God is assigning to you.
Okay. So does anyone know what chapter 20 of Exodus is? It's the big one. It's the Big Ten. It's the Big Ten. It's the Ten Commandments. So this is commandment number 5 in the Ten Commandments. We'll talk about later, why is it placed as number 5? Because there's some significance to that. We'll get there later. So within the Ten Commandments, we're told, Kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, honor your father and mother. I'm going to translate the next 3 words in Hebrew. It's the 4th to last word on the first line in Hebrew. Leman ya'arichun yamecha, in order that your days will become lengthened. From orech or aroch, which means long, and yamecha from yamim, your days. So honor your parents so that your days will be lengthy. This is a promise. It's one of the few mitzvot in the Torah that come with the promise of a specific reward. The reward of honoring your parents according to the Torah is long life, long days. And specifically, there's some connection also, God saying, honor your parents because I'm giving you the land of Israel. We're going to leave that off for now. So this is a mitzvah that gets a promised reward. It's not common that we get a reward. And some of the commentaries think that you need an explicit reward for this mitzvah because it's such a darn hard mitzvah. And if the Torah, if Hashem didn't tell us, you know, there's something good in this at the end of the day, it would be much harder for us to be incentivized to actually do it. So why do you have to honor your parents? God says, do it, and I'll give you something. You'll get a reward at the end. I saw one commentary that was fascinating for people who have their parents into their parents' old age. So people who have adult parents might be tempted to think sometimes, and I think it can happen. Like, gosh, what's taking so long? Am I going to have to do this forever? And the promise in the Torah is, don't worry, even if you're caring for your parents into their old age, the more you do the mitzvah, you'll end up having long days yourself so that you'll be able to kind of have a few decades, hopefully, for your own well-being, which I thought was like a fascinating take on the reward associated with this mitzvah. So far, how does...
Sorry.
It's okay.
That seems so much longer.
Yeah, well, that's the ambiguity in the phrase.
That it doesn't seem so much longer?
No, it could be.
It might seem so much longer.
The days could be long if you're taking care of your parents.
Okay. Duly noted. I'm gonna save myself. I'm going to plead the 5th on that one. What's the verb used here to respond to what we're supposed to do with our parents?
Kabed.
Kabed from kavod, giving honor. Right. So we'll have to define, the Talmud's going to actually ask this question. And Jeff, this is kind of your point. What does it mean to give honor? Right? Does this mean you buy them gifts? Does this mean you talk to them nicely? Does this mean you have to sacrifice from your own well-being? Right? These are the questions that the Talmud's going to ask.
Doesn't say love them.
Doesn't say to love them. But interesting that generally speaking, the Torah refrains from commanding feelings. Right? If you just think about all the mitzvot, I can only think of two.
Well, ve'ahavta is
stuff. So there's only with two exceptions, right? One is ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, you should love God your Lord. It's the beginning of the Shema, right? So there's a mitzvah to love God, and ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, should love your fellow as yourself. There's actually a third exception. There's a third feeling that is commanded by the Bible. And it's something that every rabbi talks about once a year.
It's not from the Torah.
You're right. That's Mishnah. Yeah, you're right. That's Hillel, right?
Mishnah.
Rabbi Kiva or Hillel? Anyways.
Pirkei Avot.
Yeah, I'm just thinking who in Pirkei Avot said it. So there's actually one other mitzvah in the Torah that commands a feeling. It's a tough one to get, unless if you think about the calendar. Think about holidays.
Oh, V'samachta
B'chagai. Great. So there's one holiday on the holiday of Sukkot. The Torah says, V'samachta v'chagecha, you should rejoice, be happy in your holiday. And the end of that verse says, V'hayita ach sameach, you should be nothing but happy. So every commentary jumps up and says, one second, how can God command us to feel things? maybe I had a crummy day. Maybe how can I be happy if I had a bad day? Okay, we'll save that for another time. Here, the Torah is, to Yossi's point, not commanding us you should love. Some of the commentaries read love into this, so we'll have to deal with that later. I remember there's a great Simpsons episode about, was it Mr. Burns and his father? I don't remember. Anyways, I'm dating. I haven't watched Simpsons in 15 years or so. So there's an episode where a father and son realize that they have to honor each other but not love each other, and then they walk away like holding hands. It's this kind of counterintuitive moment. So we'll see. Maybe love is not commanded. Yes, yeah, Steve.
Just really quick. Love is a natural emotion people feel that normally does not require a commandment.
So love is a natural emotion.
That is normally the parent in the parent-child relationship.
Great.
That need not be commanded. Honor and respect do need to be commanded.
Okay. So what Steve's saying is actually interesting. There are commentators who say something similar about whether there's a specific obligation, even though the Torah says you should love God, not all the commentaries list it as a commandment. And for the commentaries who don't list it as a commandment, some people explain that, like, I don't think Maimonides lists it as a commandment. And some people explain it as, you know, why is it not a commandment? Because it's the foundation of everything else. It's kind of a natural occurrence, but you can't really, it's not something that is in the realm of commandment. So similar to what you're saying. So that's mitzvah number one with regards to parents, is honoring your parents so that you have long life, or maybe, as Pauline says, so that your life feels really long. She said it, not me.
Something beautiful. Love you cannot teach, but honor you can teach.
Great. That's it. You can't. So it's either you can't teach it, or you can't enforce it, right? Maybe you can't command it to start with, because it's something that's either felt or not felt. But you can teach honor, and we'll see how.
You said about your teacher in school. You teach it.
Or you can teach respect in school. Yeah.
I was just saying something about, we were talking about this before we came.
Okay.
I was saying that in my country, when I sat in a classroom, when the teacher walked in, all the students stood up.
So we're going to get there. We're going
to
get there.
Somebody older than us who is our teacher, even though we were just elementary school kids.
So I think that came from the Talmud.
Huh.
I could be wrong.
In South America.
Yeah, maybe, you know, often. Well, wouldn't be this greatest, it wouldn't be the first thing the Catholics borrow from the Jews. Okay, so let's now go on to verse 2. Verse 2 is not in the Ten Commandments. It's in one of the most important chapters in Leviticus and Vayikra. This chapter is often referred to as the Holiness Code. It's the part of Vayikra that opens with the words, I'm going to read verses 1 and 2, or paraphrase them in Hebrew. Verse 1, God says to Moses, saying, Daber al kol adat b'nei Yisrael, speak to the entire assembly of the children of Israel, and you should tell them, Kadoshim to you, you should be holy, Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem, because I, God, your Lord, am holy. So this is like the biggest commandment in the world. What should you be in your lives? Holy. What does holiness mean? Here's a chapter of examples. That's how the chapter begins. And what's the first example of holiness? Verse 3 says, Bill, do you want to read it the second to last line for us and on?
You shall each revere his mother and his father and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God.
Okay, so two odd commandments that don't seem to mesh with each other so well. But let's just focus on the language here. I'll read it again in the Hebrew. Ish imo ve'aviv tira'u. A person, or here it's a man, his mother and his father, he shall fear, or shall be feared. So what's the operating verb now? It's not honor, it's
fear.
Fear. Awe, maybe, reverence. Right, that's the translation here, to revere. The juxtaposition with Shabbat is interesting. Maybe Shabbat is the way that you show fear for God, just like treating your parents with respect or with fear. You know, maybe there's a parallel there between God and your parents. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God your Lord, seems to be the justification. Why should you honor your parents? Because I am God. So there seems to be some kind of meshing of when you treat your parents with respect or with fear, it's like you're treating God with fear or with awe and reverence as well. So let's put on our Bible hats for a minute, and look at the ordering of the words carefully. Do you see any differences in the commandments in Shemot and Exodus and the Ten Commandments and the commandments in Vayikra?
It's father and mother in Shemot, and it's mother and father in Vayikra.
Right. If you look at the order of which parent is listed first, the order changes. So when it comes to kavod, when it comes to honoring, father comes first. And when it comes to fearing, mother comes first. So Miriam's saying, like, got to put the fear of God in you. Yeah. Right? Okay. So we'll see what the Talmud has to say about this. So this is one difference that I want to highlight, is the ordering of who comes first, your mother or your father. And we believe that the Torah is written, every word was written and given by Hashem with great intention, and that there's meaning to the choice and the order of the words themselves. So the Talmud is going to discuss that. And we still have to figure out what's the difference between honor and fear. I'll point Maimonides in his Code of the Mitzvot. So Maimonides, Rambam wrote a lot of different things, but one of them is called Sefer HaMitzvot. One of his works is called the Book of Commandments, where he lists in order that they appear in the Torah. The first half of the book is all the positive commandments, and the second half of the book is all the negative commandments. And he lists honoring and fearing your parents as two separate commandments. So clearly there's two different things going on here. Steve, are you going to say something? Okay. So we're going to jump into the Talmud. There's actually... Okay. I'm sure you'll make up for it later. We're going to jump into the Talmud in Kiddushin. For some reason, a lot of the content around honoring your parents comes up in the Talmud in Kiddushin, which is the tractate that talks primarily about how to create a marriage. I don't know why it came up here. I'm sure someone has discussed that question. But there's like four pages in a row in the Talmud that talk about honoring your parents, honoring elders. So a lot of our sources today are going to come from these few pages in the Gemara and Kiddushin, and that's source three. I'd like to start with the bottom. You see I kind of divided it into two parts. I'd like to start with the bottom of the source in Kiddushin. I believe this is the top of 31a, which asks the question that we were just dealing with. Why does the order change in these two verses? And so again, let's just remember, when it comes to honoring your parents, the father came first. And when it comes to fearing your parents, the mother came first. And so we had this, Miriam and Yossi were going back and forth, right? Maybe a person intuitively fearing more of their father or their mother, honoring more of their mother or their father. So let's see what the Talmud has to say. Miriam, do you want to read the bottom of source 3?
It was taught that Rabbi Yehuda said, "It is revealed and known to him whose decree brought the world into existence."
So basically, God who created the world knows the following. Okay.
"That a son honors his mother more than his father, because she sways him in with her words. Therefore, the Holy One, blessed be he, placed the honor of the father before that of the mother. It is revealed and known to him whose decree brought the world into existence, that a son reveres his father more than his mother, because he teaches him Torah. Therefore, the Holy One, blessed be he, mentioned the fear of the mother before that of the father."
Okay. So the Talmud here is reading kind of that the Torah knows the intuitive sense of children, and God therefore chose the opposite of what comes naturally to us. So let's break it down. When it comes to kavod, when it comes to honor, honoring here seems to be the more positive side of the commandment, right? It's doing things for your parents. And who is a child more likely to want to do things for? I just saw this tonight. We were at dinner, and thank God I have a really close relationship with our 4-year-old daughter. But she said, "Oh, I made a card for you guys at GON today." And she started to decide, like, who am I giving it to? She's like, "Oh, it's only one card." She remembered that after the fact. And she's like, "I'm going to give it to Ima." Like, thanks, Sarah. That's so nice. Right, like, what am I, a chopped liver? So that's what the Gemara is saying here, right? That children have a deeper relationship with their mothers. Right, they talk more with their mothers. Certainly, before like the modern era of parenting, right? I've been watching Mad Men lately, which is an interesting show. And total aside, but it's crazy to me that like I think it's a fairly accurate depiction of probably 1950s America or at least New York. And like the father, he's like kind of this figure who exists in his children's lives, right? But he doesn't have an intimate relationship with them. But he sees them for like 10 minutes every like twice a week, right? He pats them on the head. He says like, "Be a good kid," and then goes off to do his philandering and his work.
Sorry.
Probably. Yeah. So without advocating for that, there seems to be something that the Torah is suggesting here, which is children have closer relationships with their mothers, and therefore they want to do more. They want to give more things to their mothers. Therefore, what does the Torah do? When it comes to the mitzvah of honoring, which here means doing the positive stuff, right? It places the father first as a kind of a corrective weight to what a child's natural inclination would be. Okay? And the opposite is true when it comes to fear. I'd say, going back to my own family, this is probably the opposite again as well. I think Meir is the more loved and the more feared one, with Star at least. I'm too much of a softie. But at least back in the Gemara's time, the Gemara is suggesting that generally fathers are more feared than mothers by their children. The Gemara's explanation here is because they teach them Torah, and Torah is this awe-inspiring thing, and it was traditionally the father's role to teach it to the children. And so in any case, children tend to fear their father more than their mother. Therefore, what does the Torah do? It puts the mother first to say you have to give an equal dose of fear, whatever that means, to your mother in addition to your father. So in both cases, the Gemara is saying they're serving as correctives to what a child's inclination is. Jeff, you seem skeptical?
No.
Okay, just thinking about it. With that in mind, I'll just tell you what the beginning of this source says. The beginning of the source notices that when the Torah says, kabed, you should honor your father and your mother, the Gemara always does wordplay. And it notices other places that the word kabed is used. And the Gemara says that not only is the word that you should honor used for your father and mother, it's also used in Proverbs for you should honor God with all of your assets. So what does this teach you? This teaches you, the Gemara starts off by saying, that the honor of your parents is equally important to the honor of God. Strong, right? Strong language, right? It's just as important of a mitzvah. There's always, the rabbis in a bunch of sources kind of play this game of what commandment is more important, or which are the most important commandments. So even though in Pirkei Avot it says, don't try to evaluate what commandments are more heavy or more light, which ones are more important than others, you know, the Mishnah says it, and we do it anyways. Right? We're always trying to figure out what's the most important one. If you only have time for one, what do you do? And so there's lots of opinions. So sometimes we say Torah study is the most important mitzvah, right? But here, the Gemara is saying that honoring your parents is just as important as honoring God. It goes on to say the same thing is true with fearing your parents is just as important as fearing God, right? Because we have a source in Devarim, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, as Hashem Elokecha Tira, you should be fearful of God and worship God. So I see the word fear with my parents, and I see the word fear with God, kind of put in the algebra, the Talmudic algebra, right? A plus B equals C, or something like, no, it doesn't work that way. Right? A equals B, therefore you have to honor both your parents equally to the way that you fear God. Fearing your parents is equal to fearing God. And finally, the last point that the Gemara makes is if a person curses his parents, his or her parents, that's as bad as cursing God, which is one of the, you know, right. It's a rough commandment, yeah. The Gemara goes on to talk about punishments. I'll just point out that the Talmud also says one of the prohibitions that are biblically obligated in with regards to parents is not hitting parents, is not causing physical damage to them, which we'll talk about, we might get to later. This brings up a fascinating discussion. What if a child is a doctor and the parent needs a medical surgery? So there's actually a prohibition called chavala. You're not allowed to damage your parents' bodies. So the simple interpretation of that is like you can't hit your parents, right? But what if you need to, let's say, take a shot? What if you need to give them an injection? That's technically considered to be a form of harm. So this question comes up in the Talmud itself. And many of the poskim discuss it. It seems to be if there's ever a way that you can have someone else who's not a child to do a medical procedure for the parent, it's always better that way. Only in a case when it's pikuach nefesh, when it's required for life-saving, like if there's no other doctor in town, then it might be permitted for a child to do it for their parent. So, okay, those are a number of details that are given.
The way we honor God is just by doing his commandments, that's it.
How do we honor God? Well, this probably goes back to the question that Yossi and Steve were bringing up before. Where's love? Does love mix into this? Right. So certainly, there's the acts we have to do for God. Right. Judaism is far more a religion of deed than dogma. Right. It's much more about what you do than necessarily what you think. Or to put it in the safer way, if you only love God and you don't do anything for God, the love is worthless. Right. It's the deeds that are the most important.
Well, it's hard to love such a figure,
yes,
which is not,
yeah,
there, you know.
So it's interesting that there's probably a parallel question about both how can you command loving parents and how can you command loving God. It's similar kind of comparison to the two. Let's get into the tangible side. What does the Gemara actually say is honor, and what does the Gemara actually say is fear? So that the Talmud explicitly addresses this question. This is source 4. Yossi, do you want to read this for us?
Sure. So, I just thought,
yeah,
what is fear and what is honor? Fear of one's father includes the following. One may not stand in his father's fixed place and may not sit in his place and may not contradict his statement by expressing an opinion contrary to his father. And he may not choose sides when his father argues with someone else.
Let's pause there for a second. So that is how the Gemara has just defined fear, or mora. Here, they use a different version of yira, of mora, fear. So we're not so familiar with this nowadays, but in the Gemara, there's a very strong concept of makom kavua, of having a set place. So this applies to a seat in the synagogue. Right, exactly. It's still kind of a thing. We have it to some degree here about Jacob. If people have fixed seats, then it's a prohibition for a child to sit in the parents' fixed seat in shul. If there's a fixed seat at the dinner table, a child's not allowed to sit in the parents' seat. So in our house, we don't like having fixed seats, so it's not really so relevant. I end up moving around anyways. But if I were to have a fixed seat, I would remind my child, you can sit anywhere else, but this is where Abba sits, this is where Ima sits. The same thing is true in synagogue. If your father is a fixed place to stand, so this is probably going to a Beit Midrash setting or a study hall setting or a synagogue setting, right? If your parent stands in a specific place in the shul, the child shouldn't take that place. Could a parent forgive that? Is it a right or is it an obligation? So we'll have to see that. Does the parent have the right of refusal to this? We'll get to this a little bit later. And finally, the other part of fear, of yira, is being when your parent says something, right? You don't question their judgment in public, right? The Gemara later talks about, well, what if your parent says something that is sinful? How should you deal with that? And so we suggest that you shouldn't contradict them in public. You should wait till they're in a private setting and then say something, and you should say it in a deferential way, instead of saying oh, didn't you know that milk and meat should not be eaten together, you should say, well, isn't there a mitzvah in the Torah of, not cooking your kid in its mother's milk? You should kind of get to it indirectly, ideally speaking. Okay, so that's so far as fear, and let's now move on to part 2. Yes, you want to keep going?
What considers honor? He gives his father food and drink, blesses and covers him, and brings him in and takes him out for all his household needs.
Okay, we'll pause there for now. We can see there's a clear distinction, right? Right, fearing one's parents is about kind of the things you don't do. You don't do in respect to them, and honor is the things you do to give respect to your parents. A lot of these things seem to be more relevant to older age. That's how you'd assume it now, providing food and drink. But there was probably a day and age where children would be the ones to bring food to the table for their parents. There's this active thing that you take care of your parents' needs, even as a younger person. And if they act, certainly if your parents ask you to do chores, right, that falls in the kavod, in the honor segment, and not in the yira segment. So we have this kind of breakdown. The Gemara's next question that I'm going to summarize for now is, what if your parent asks you for the greatest Cabernet Sauvignon wine to bring to their table, and for, I don't know, kosher filet mignon that you can get in LA, and caviar, and what if your parent says all that? To what degree do you have to go out to cover this mitzvah of kaved, of honoring through doing? Do you have to suffer financially to honor your parents? Contemporary examples of this question, right? If your parent says, I want you to come home for Thanksgiving, and they live halfway across the world, right? Are you obligated to spend a few thousand dollars on a plane ticket to do your parents' wishes? So this actually is a machloket. The Gemara debates this back and forth. And remind me that we will get back to this at the end of our class when we talk about abusive parents, because we're going to come up to this discussion again. Okay, let's now talk about some practical sides here. Other obligations that we have in our tradition for parents. So Miriam mentioned this before. Standing for one's parents is a mitzvah. There's a debate. Do you have to stand when you see them, even if they're far away, or only if they come into like your close proximity? But still, standing is a mitzvah. Not calling your parents by their first names is considered to be one of the mitzvot. It's codified in Shulchan Aruch that children should not use their parents' first name. They should, mother, father, Abba, Ima, mom, dad, it's all good. Just not, like, this is something that I tell my daughter all the time. Like, she, you know, kids pick it up at a certain point, and then they start to test you, right? So at some point, my daughter was like, Gershon. She was, like, I could tell she was baiting me. And I said, you know, Sarah, you have a special name for Abba, right? And that's Abba. And Gershon is for Abba and Ima to talk to each other. But it's important for children, and I think both halachically and also pedagogically, it's important for children to realize and to learn and to be modeled that the way they treat their parents has to be different than other relationships, right? I would say if there's like a philosophy here, it's that in Judaism, a parent is more than a friend, right? A parent has to, if children don't learn how to kind of, or aren't modeled how to respect their parents in a special way, then it's much harder to learn how to respect their other human beings later in life. So I think that's an ideal. I mentioned not causing injury before, so that comes up with medicine. And lastly, not swearing in one's parents' name. We kind of dealt with that. Are there limits to the obligation of honoring your parents? Let's say under normal circumstances, not talking about abusive situations. Intuitively, are there any times where you would think that you don't have to honor your parents? It's kind of a tough one.
What if they tell you to do something illegal?
Great. So your parent says, I want you to rob a bank, right? To put, you saw that coat? I like that coat that person's wearing. Look, they just put it down on the table. I want you to take it from me. So it's clear in halacha that you don't break any other mitzvah. Generally, we assume that doing something illegal is a prohibition according to the Torah. The rabbis say, Dina de Malchuta Dina, the law of the land is the law, and we're obligated to follow the law, unless if the law contradicts the Torah. But generally speaking, that's not the case. So if a parent would ask you to do something illegal, if a parent would ask you to commit a sin, you're not obligated and you're actually prohibited from listening to your parents in that case. The poskim actually have three specific examples of when you should not listen to your parents. One is if you want to go study Torah, I think, I won't tell this to Anne, this came up maybe 40 years ago. If a child wants to go study Torah and their parent says, no, you're not allowed, I guess the Talmud is biased. And it says you're allowed to go study and ignore your parents' requests. The same thing about moving to Israel. If a person wants to make Aliyah, sorry for the parents in the room with kids in Israel right now. Don't want to scare you, daughter. But in theory, a child is allowed, according to the poskim, to make Aliyah even if their parents ask them not to. And lastly, if you find someone who you'd like to marry and your parent says, I don't think that's the right shidduch, I don't think that's the right match, either I don't want you to get married now or I don't want you to marry this person, you're specifically not obligated, according to the Talmud, to honor your parents under those requests.
Esav
listened?
Yeah.
Well, after Esav had already had several wives who his father didn't like, he went back and took a few more wives that his father did like.
But we don't have that privilege.
We don't have that privilege. 1,000 years lost.
What if the spouse is someone who is doing something illegal or something like that?
Yeah. Do the parent... Is a child obligated to listen to the parents in that context? Let's say the parent...
They're not going to anyway.
Right, they're not... Right, that's... I think that at that point, it's about, you know, listening to people who are wiser than you, who may have experience. I think the technical law is they're allowed to marry whoever they want. Then there's a question of, like, do they appreciate the benefits of honoring their parents, which is that their parents might actually have something to teach them. It's a good point.
What about marrying someone who's not Jewish?
So where the parent
didn't come up back then.
That's come up for a long time. Okay. Yeah, that's not a new challenge.
Okay.
If the parents say no. I mean, again, the Talmud and, you know, the post-game are going to say that you shouldn't do it for other reasons. So it's kind of going to be a moot point for them. I think independently, this halacha still stands, which is that a child has the right to marry whomever they want. But that's a good question. Okay.
So surprising.
Yeah, is this...
I never knew that.
Yeah. I think it, you know, it's intuitively... Well, intuitively, I think there's something to this, which is that, like, choosing your life partner is this moment where you declare your independence. I think, I don't know if this is the specific reason given in the Torah, but in Genesis, I think it's chapter two of Genesis, right? The Torah says after Eve is created, Al ken ya'azov ish et aviv et imo, avidabek lishto, which is there will come a point, or therefore a man will leave his father and mother and will cling to his wife. And like the Torah recognizes that there's this kind of moment in transition in a human being's life where they go from being primarily child to primarily spouse. And that is a natural process that has to be respected. That like a child has to be given space at some point for their own autonomy, which is what we're going to get to. We're going to deal with a more extreme version of this, which is, you know, what if a parent's desire for their children very strongly contradicts or comes up against their child's own personal well-being. We'll deal with that in an extreme case. I think it's also important to say that these mitzvot are so deeply particular to each and every case, you can't really generalize for a lot of them. So I'm kind of going to give an extreme case at the end, or a few extreme cases.
If the son wants to marry a non-Jewish woman, he still has to...
Well, it's not permitted on other grounds, right?
But specifically what the Talmud says about it.
What the Talmud says, I think the Talmud says one thing is a child doesn't have to listen to their parents about who to marry, and it doesn't bring up that specific permutation of it. Separately, the Talmud's going to frown on intermarriage. So, like, they're two separate laws. I don't think they contradict each other necessarily. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Where does the obligation come from? Like, why should one honor one's parents? So there's a beautiful comment in Sefer Achinuch. Sefer Achinuch is another book in the style of the Rambam that I mentioned earlier. About in the 1100s, a number of rabbis noticed that the Talmud said that there was a specific number of commandments. What's the famous number? How many commandments are there? 613 commandments. The Talmud says that there's 613. How do we know? Because the numerical value of the word Torah is 611. The extra two were the two that God spoke to the Jewish people directly instead of Moses speaking to them, because there's this midrash that God spoke the first two commandments to everyone. Then we started dying because we couldn't listen to God's voice directly. And so we said, Moshe, you teach us the rest of them. So from commandment three on, Moshe taught them to us. The verse says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe taught us the Torah. So Moshe taught us the 611 from the numerical value of Torah. Where are the other two? Those are the first two that God taught. Put them all together. It's 2 plus 611, you get 613. 613 commandments. Beautiful. At some point in the early medieval period, the rabbis realized, what are they? Right? No one wrote down the list. So now what the rabbis did in the early medieval period is they started to go through the entire Bible and the Talmudic commentaries and figure out, okay, there's lots and lots of commandments. If you read through the entire Talmud and you say each time God asks us to do something, like check one, right? You're going to get to way more than 613. You're going to get to thousands and thousands of commandments. But which ones are actually the 613 in the Bible itself? And so the rabbis go through this long process where Maimonides writes a list, and then Nachmanides says, no, Rambam, you're wrong in all these cases. And there's this long discussion about what makes the cut of the 613. And one of the books that did this is Sefer Achinuch. We don't know who wrote it, but it's an extremely important book. It goes through all 613 commandments in that interpretation. It's quite similar to Maimonides. And in addition to listing them, it goes through the philosophy of every single one. So let's look at how the Sefer Achinuch describes the philosophy of honoring your parents. Yes, you just read. Terry, do you want to read source 5?
Sure. It is only appropriate for one to recognize and reciprocate kindness to those who have dealt kindly with him, and certainly not to act in a vile manner, estranging oneself and being an ingrate, for this is a bad character trait and is completely despised by God and for the things. One should appreciate the fact that his parents are the source of his very existence as well, and it is therefore appropriate for him to act as respectfully and beneficially as he can. Besides having brought him into the world, they also expend a tremendous effort in raising him as a child.
Okay. So if you were to boil down that point in the Sefer Achinuch, why is there a mitzvah to honor your parents? Gratitude. Right? Simple principle. Rav Sadia Gaon, who's the first Jewish philosopher, kind of assumes that there are basic principles of philosophy that everyone would agree on. And one of them, one of his most core principles, is the principle of being grateful to one who does good for you. Like he's saying, that's something that everyone would agree to. And so what's the core basis, according to the Sefer Achinuch, for honoring your parents? They brought you to the world, right? You have to honor them. There's a point here that to read into the Sefer Achinuch, even if you didn't have the best parents in the world, right? There's still some base level of gratitude for the fact that they created you and brought you into existence in the first place, right? It's tough. I think that's what causes a lot of pain and anguish for children who've had difficult relationships with their parents, right? Because you can't really write off the relationship and still feel whole as a human being entirely, right? You could have had I've, as a rabbi and in my pastoral role, I've heard terrible, terrible things that parents have done to children. And even so, the parents still created the children. And so it creates this tension, right? Of like a parent who's done the ultimate act of chesed, of kindness, which is bringing a new human life into the world. And yet, then there's everything else. And how do you balance the two? Well, on some level, there's a base level of gratitude just for the act of creation itself.
Well, you can also say the kid didn't ask to be born.
The kid didn't ask to be born. The Talmud says that somewhere, that it's better that we shouldn't have been born. Now that we were born, let's do our best. There's something to that. It wasn't me, it was the Gemara. One level number one, why is there an obligation to honor your parents? Because it's the most fundamental level of fundamental example of gratitude that exists. It's the first thing that any person should be grateful for. It's the fact that they were created in the first place. Right? I'll give you one other reason. This goes back to the placement of the commandment in the Ten Commandments. So we know, we call it the Decalogue, right? The tablets are often called the Decalogue, the tablets with the Ten Commandments listed on them. And the famous, if you look up the front of Beth Jacob, every rendition of the Ten Commandments, right, puts the first five commandments on the first tablet and the second five commandments on the second tablet. And where does honoring your parents make it into? So it's actually bottom, right, number five, depending on where you're starting. If you're starting at the top, it's the bottom of the first tablet. What's the difference between the two tablets?
God and Moses.
Right, the first five commandments are seemingly commandments between us and God. And the second tablet is about us and people, right? Which makes sense until you get to number five, right? Number one is, I am God, believe in God. Number two is, don't believe in idols. Number three is, don't create idols, don't make them. Number four is, honor the Shabbat. Okay, that's about God, right? The Shabbat is testimony to God creating the world. And then you get to number five, which is, honor your parents. One second, it's on the wrong tablet, right? It should be on the second one, which is about don't steal and don't murder and don't covet and don't be, right? It should be on number two. Many of the commentaries point out that honoring your parents, right, we saw this earlier, is tantamount to, right, honoring God. It goes back to a Gemara that we saw last time, two times ago, that there are three partners in the creation of every human life, in the creation of every human soul. Right? There's a mother, a father, and God. And that's the way that I think we experience faith. Like when you learn, hopefully as parents, and this is a great service that parents can do their children, or at least attempt to do, right, because children have minds of their own. But if you try to create a modeled relationship where a child feels loved but also feels a sense of reverence, right, and then hopefully they model that back where there's kavod, there's honor, but there's also a sense of fear. When they learn to do that with their parents, hopefully they learn to do that with God as well, right? And so there's something to that, as a reason for the mitzvah, right? Honoring your parents is the practice ground for honoring God also. It's interesting that a lot of the honoring you do for your parents is before your bar and bat mitzvah, right? But hopefully you work on it and you work on it, and by the time you get to bar and bat mitzvah, you can take on the responsibilities to God too. Just thoughts. There's lots to cover, so let's keep on going with section two, which is not honoring parents, but honoring elders. So honoring elders gets its own mitzvah in the Torah. I think it's a topic that many people are not aware of. I'll start with a midrash that I found today. It's a great midrash. So there's a whole midrashic tradition about the relationship between Avraham and Yitzchak, between Isaac and his father Abraham, that the midrash says that because Avraham and Sarah were so old when they had a kid, when Sarah got pregnant, I think she was 90 years old, right? According to the midrash says that the nations of the world started, you know, yapping and saying, when Yitzchak was born, the nations of the world started yapping and saying, it's not possible that this is actually a natural, that this is actually like Avraham's and Sarah's kid. And so what did God do? God made Yitzchak look like the spitting image of his father. Look identical to his father, so that everyone would know that this was like a natural. Okay.
Oh, wow. She gets mad, so to give up her seat for Joanne.
Oh wow.
She doesn't want to be considered old.
So just for the sake of the recording, that somehow pause in the middle because I'm going to be putting this online. We got cut off at some point, and I'm restarting the recording. And we are talking about the mitzvah of honoring elders, not just parents. So we're up to the point about what if an older person would be insulted if you were to stand up for them. And so the Talmud actually talks about who can be mochel al kvoda, who could forgive their honor. Basically, who's allowed to give it up. The Talmud says that a king is not allowed to be mochel al kvoda, that a king is not allowed to give up on their honor, but a parent is allowed to. So this comes up in a variety of contexts, but a parent and an elder, if they ask you, please do not stand up for me, then the opposite is probably true at that point. Then you probably not only do not have to, but you shouldn't. And so there's a sensitivity here about trying. There's a subjectivity to this mitzvah, right? If you get the sense that someone would be more hurt than honored by you standing up or doing something for them, then you have to take that into account as well. And so I'll leave it at that. And last but not least, I'll tell you what some of the rabbis say to explain this, the reasoning behind here. It's a beautiful description from Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. I encourage you to read it later in Source 11. He points out that the reason there's two different mitzvahs, right? There's seva and there's zakein, right? There's the seva we'll probably say is the person of old age, and then zakein is the elder, the wise elder, is the scholar. And he says that there's basically two forms of wisdom that have to be respected in the world. There's kind of the intuitive wisdom that a person gains through life experience. And then there's the wisdom of study and learning. And those are two separate spheres, and they both need to be respected. Which I thought is like a beautiful description. Right? Like the Torah acknowledges that there is a wisdom that is gained just through living life. And that is, in its own way, just as commendable and respectable as someone who has studied. I guess in a perfect world, we'd be able to get both. But in any case, just having lived life experience is worthy of being stood up for. That's a form of wisdom that needs to be honored in and of itself. And you can read more about that in Source 11 after. Last but not least, how do we deal with the question of being obligated to honor one's parents when those parents have been harmful? Which is, unfortunately, not an uncommon question. So I'll pause by saying that this is an extremely subjective part of the... In a very subjective conversation, this is an even more subjective part of the conversation to just like lay out some of the possibilities that we could be talking about, right? Not all forms of bad parenting are created equal, There are parents who try and don't always do the best job. There are parents who do harm to their children and do it on purpose, right? Who are conscious and aware of the harm that they're causing their children and do it anyways. There's probably a difference between neglect, right? Not giving the children what they need as opposed to active abuse. And even within active abuse, right, there's just to kind of name the terms, right? There's physical abuse, there's emotional or intellectual abuse, there's sexual abuse, right? And unfortunately, these are all practical questions that people in our community have to deal with. And so these are very real questions. One of the challenges to this halachic conversation is that the Talmud, we didn't read through all of the passages in the Talmud and Kiddushin, but the Gemara quotes a number of like awe-inspiring stories about honoring parents that seem to go so above and beyond, and sometimes even seem to speak towards cases where parents were being abusive of their children. So I'll give you one example. This is probably the most extreme example. And I've heard a number of psychologists in the Orthodox community say that it's because of this story that kids with abusive parents often don't realize that they're allowed to stand up for themselves and that they're allowed to kind of push back against the abuse. So let's read this story quickly. It's verse 12 in Kiddushin 31a. So I'm going to read it quickly. That when Rabdimi came from Israel to Babylonia, he says a story. And there was a man named Dama ben Netina. The Talmud here doesn't say who he was, but we know from elsewhere that he was probably either a Greek or a Roman prince who was overseeing the Jews living in Israel. And so he's kind of the royal Gentile lineage and probably aristocratic lineage. Okay, so once Dama ben Netina was wearing a fine cloak of gold and was sitting among the nobles of Rome. Okay, so what's he doing? He was back home for vacation, hanging out with all of his, you know, aristocratic friends, wearing very fancy clothing. Okay, so, and his mother came to him and tore his garment off of him and smacked him on the head and spat in his face, and yet he did not embarrass her. Didn't do anything. Sorry. He didn't have to. Okay. Okay, that's a generous reading of it. The Talmud here seems to be giving this story in its original context as like, how far is the mitzvah of Kibud Av Aim? Well, look at this as your example. But that's the way that it's kind of, that's the way that it's described in the Gemara. So what does that mean, right? Does that mean that we should let our parents spit in our faces and smack us around? So how do we deal with this Gemara? This is a major challenge for a lot of young adults who are emerging in the religious community who want to keep the mitzvot. There's a huge amount of psychological tension that religious victims of abuse have to deal with because, like, I want to follow the mitzvot of the Torah. This is number 5 in the Ten Commandments. Right? So what are you telling me? I'm exempt? That I don't do it? How do I deal with this? And so it's an incredibly challenging mitzvah, particularly for children who are going through the trauma of recovering from abuse. And so, in short, there's a lot to talk about here, but I'll highlight a few points. Maimonides, in his codes, Hilchot Mamrim, in his Laws of Rebels, gives advice to parents, and basically says that as a parent, there is an obligation to you, right? You have to be honored by your children, but don't take advantage of that obligation. Don't take advantage of what your children owe you. And the Rambam actually says that don't be too harsh on your children when they're not honoring you necessarily. Right? It's their responsibility to honor you, but there's a gvul, there's a limit when it's not worth pushing it. And the Rambam actually says that if you go too far, you're going to be liable of placing a stumbling block before the blind, which is an interesting kind of thinking. If you push your kids too far, if you enact, right, the you must honor your parents law too often, you take it too far, then at some point your children will have no choice other than to rebel against you. It backfires, and your response, lifnei, so there's a mitzvah, lifnei iver lo titen michshol, you should not place a stumbling block before the blind, saying if you push your kids too hard to honor you, and you're causing them to sin when they don't honor you. It's a fascinating Rambam, right? There's a responsibility on parents to use this privilege carefully and to use that privilege well. So that's what the Rambam says. What's practical advice that's given to children who are in this situation? And it's not always children. Sometimes these are adults who are realizing years or decades later that they've gone through this. So again, no two situations are created the same. But here's a few factors to think about. There are poskim, including Rabbi Moshe Isserles, who wrote the gloss for Ashkenaz Jewry in the Shulchan Aruch. In a few points, he says things that are helpful for us in this conversation. He says that a rasha, if there's an evil parent, that there may not be an obligation to honor them. That you have to honor good parents, but not evil parents. It's a point of debate, but that's one position that's taken. That's a little bit risky, because then when you're starting to get into the category of who's good and who's evil, I saw Rabbi Dov Linzer, who's a Rosh Yeshiva in New York, pointed this out. Like, when you're starting to categorize people, we're complicated human beings, right? People are capable of doing lots of good and lots of bad together. And so it's complicated to say, like, this person's a Rasha, I don't have to honor them. It's a little bit easier if they're, like, a sexual molester, right? If it's something that's, like, very black and white, it's an easier consideration. But it's not always that clear-cut. Tosfot, who's the Rashi's grandchildren, comment on that story in the Talmud about the Roman royal who lets himself get spit in the face. Tosfot says that the Midrash explains this story, that you know why the royal allowed himself to be insulted? It says because his mother, Haita Mitorefet Midata, his mother was dementing, that she was kind of having this difficult situation, and if she had been in a normal circumstance, he wouldn't have tolerated it. But it's because she wasn't able to control herself in that moment that it was permitted for him, that he took on an additional stringency of, like, not saying anything, of just honoring her in that moment. So I think there's something there. Lastly, some poskim take the perspective. I mentioned before that there's a debate about whether you have to honor your parents if they are going to require you to pay for them, right? We mentioned that before. Mm-hmm. So if your parents are saying, I need you to fly to Cancun right now because that's where I am and I need you to make me dinner, right? Like, something along those lines. So we poskin that you're not obligated to use all of your money to care for your parents. Generally, there's a category you're supposed to spend up to a fifth of your resources, of your free resources, to do a mitzvah. And it's possible for your parents even less than that. So what many poskim point out is, if you don't have to spend all of your money, right? If you don't have to cause yourself a loss to honor your parents, then all the more so, you don't have to put yourself in a position of harm to honor your parents. And one last kind of category to think about this with, there's a law of a rodef, of a pursuer. So a rodef, the principle is, if someone is coming to kill you or to harm you, you're allowed to run, right? You're allowed to possibly even kill them first. I would never apply that practically saying that about a parent, but you're allowed to preserve your own life and your own well-being when there's someone who's trying to harm you. And so when questions like this come up, I think it's important to both speak to a rabbi and to speak to a therapist and a psychologist, right, to evaluate, you know, what can I handle in my mental health in a position that doesn't put me at risk, that I'm not risking my family, right, that I'm not risking my own well-being. In many cases, there's a gray zone, right, that you can do some amount of honoring without going all the way. There are some people who need to do a complete break, right, and for their own survival, their own well-being, just have to say, I'm sorry, like, I will honor you from a distance, but I'm not able to have a relationship right now. And for most people, it's somewhere in between. But it's a real challenge. It's a real life area where halacha has nuance and sensitivity to these cases. And in terms of thinking about the values of it, you know, hopefully we can all appreciate that if nothing else, we owe gratitude for the people who brought us into the world. We owe honor to our elders because they've lived more of life than us, and that's, like, a tremendous thing to recognize and to experience. And that this is not, like many things in Judaism, like many halachic discussions, right, probably different than Catholicism, We're not an all or nothing religion, right? There's nuance, and both our kind of spiritual tradition and our halachic tradition recognize that. And so hopefully we should all be able to honor our elders as we slowly inch into, we're only going in one direction. So hopefully we are honored by those who haven't yet achieved our years yet. And we can take those lessons in the coming years as well. Have a great night, everyone. Lyle, too.
Thank you.